Well, we're pushing ahead in the book of James, and so I would ask you to turn to James chapter 3, and I'm going to read verses 6 through 12. This will complete the paragraph on the subject of the tongue in the epistle of James. We read the first five verses, dealt with them last week. So this morning, verses 6 through 12, James chapter 3. Here's what James writes. "And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind, but no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth cometh blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, or a grapevine bear fruit? Thus no spring can yield both salt water and fresh." Now, James is giving us a picture of what he refers to as the perfect man. And by perfect, he doesn't mean sinless. He means the grown-up Christian, the mature Christian. And he starts out by telling us that a mature Christian is patient during trouble. Then he tells us a mature Christian practices the truth, be doers of the word, not hearers only. Now he's telling us that a mature Christian has power over what he says. He has power over his tongue. He introduces this subject back in chapter 1, verse 26, when he tells us that we need to bridle our tongue. We need to control our tongue. And if we cannot control our tongue, if we can't control our mouth, our religion, James says, is worthless. Our religion has no value. If we cannot control our tongue. The tongue is at one and the same time the smallest and the biggest troublemaker with which we have to deal. The tongue is just a small part of our body, but the tongue can sure cause a lot of trouble. And I get the impression from reading James that he's writing to people who are having all kinds of problems between themselves because somebody couldn't control their tongue. And I imagine he's writing to people who have hurt feelings about things that have been said, writing to people who maybe were dealing with resentment over things that have been said, and he is being very plain in talking to them about the importance of controlling the tongue. We're to bridle our tongue. And sometimes bridling the tongue, having it under control, means we're going to be careful about what we say. Silence can be a virtue, but sometimes silence is not a virtue. We think about bridling the tongue. We're going to bite our tongue and not say certain things. But C.S. Lewis talked about how not saying something, not speaking up when something needs to be said, is an unprotesting participation in evil. Let me say it again. C.S. Lewis says, to not speak when something needs to be said is an unprotesting participation in evil. Here's how I'd say that. There are times when silence is golden. There are times when silence is yellow. Cowardly. To not speak up when we ought to speak up is not to have our tongue under control. There are times we need to speak up because, as we talked about last week, our words give direction to life. We can use our words to help others know what they need to do. We can use our words to condemn what ought to be condemned. The psalmist said, "Let the redeemed of the Lord say so." There are times where we need to speak. So bridling the tongue is not just biting the tongue and keeping our mouth shut. Having the tongue under control means that when we need to speak, we're going to speak. Now there are times we need to tell people, would you listen to what you're saying? But even more, I think James wants us to understand that more than listening to what we're saying, we need to be listening to what we're thinking. Christ said in Matthew chapter 15, verse 12, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. What are we thinking that leads to what we say? And so we're going to go with James now through this second part of what he says about the tongue. Last week, from the first five verses, we talked about the good that can come from controlled talk. But now in the second part, we're going to talk about the devastation that can come from uncontrolled talk. Last week, James taught us that the punishment for misuse of the tongue is severe. Verse 1. And then he taught us that the potential for harm by what we say is high. But then he said, the possibility of controlling our tongue is real, and the power for the proper use of our tongue is great. And he wants us to know that if we can win the battle of the tongue, we can win every other battle we have to fight against the devil. Now, probably all of you are familiar with a fuse box. You know, you got in the house, we got a fuse box somewhere here. And you open up the fuse box over here, and what you typically see are two lines of fuses with a switch attached to each fuse. And so you flip one switch, and these lights go out. You flip another switch, those lights go out. You flip a third switch, the furnace goes out. Every circuit in this building has its own fuse, its own switch. But up at the top of the fuse box is the master switch. You flip it, everything goes out. It controls everything else. And that's what James says about the ability to control the tongue. If we can muster the willpower to keep our words under control, we've got plenty of power to control everything else. Every other temptation we have to deal with in life, we can deal with if we have the power to control what we say. And so the importance of the tongue, the importance of getting it under control. And James now is going to talk about two primary subjects in the last part of this paragraph. He's going to talk about the difficulty with the tongue, and he's going to talk about the inconsistency of the tongue. And I'm going to slip in between those two points by talking about the remedy for the tongue. So let's begin by talking about the difficulty we're facing in regard to our words and our speech and what we say. Recall last week, James says the tongue is like two little things. It's like a bit, a bridle in a horse's mouth. You got a big Clydesdale, and you got that little 4-inch long cylinder of metal, of steel, and you put that little thing in that big horse's mouth, and man, you can control that horse. He talks about the rudder on a ship compared to an aircraft carrier. A rudder is a very, very small percentage of that ship, but that rudder controls where that ship goes. And then James says, here's something else that's small. A spark that starts a fire. We've seen the pictures of L.A. burning down. A year ago, we saw the pictures of Maui, Lahaina, burning down. One little match out of a matchbox. One little match in contrast to all of L.A. that's burned and all of Hawaii that's burned. One little match, something that small, can unleash a tremendous conflagration. And James in verse 6 is going to make four statements about the tongue. He's going to talk about its character. He's going to talk about its influence. He's going to talk about its scope. He's going to talk about its source. So let's look at those. The character of the tongue, James says, is that it's a fire. A bit, a rudder, are passive. They require somebody else to control them. But have you ever heard of a fire getting out of control? A fire is a force unto itself. And that's what our tongue, that's what our speech is. And James says there in verse 6 that the tongue is so set among our members. Now that's a very rare word that James uses. Turn the page to James chapter 4, verse 4. Here's the only other place where James uses this word. James 4, verse 4. Adulterers and adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Whoever therefore wants to be a friend of the world makes himself a friend of God. That's the word. The word translated "makes himself" is the same word back here in verse 6, chapter 3. The tongue is so set. The tongue makes itself an instrument for the rest of the body. When somebody's elected president, one of the first things they do is to appoint a press secretary. And that's the person that is the president's mouthpiece. That's the person who goes out every day and tells everybody else what the president's doing, what he's thinking, what he's planning. Well, you have to be appointed to be a press secretary, but the tongue doesn't wait for an appointment. The tongue appoints itself. The tongue tells the rest of the body, if you're angry, let me do the talking for you. If you're lustful, let me do the talking for you. If you're envious of someone, let me talk for you, the tongue says. It appoints itself to be the spokesman for the rest of the body, and it's fire doing the talking. It's fire that can so easily get out of control that does the talking. And in verse 6, James kind of changes the metaphor here because he doesn't talk about the tongue burning. He talks about the tongue defiling. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body. I would have thought he would have said it burns up the whole body. No, he says it defiles the whole body. Here's how a lot of us think about our words. We think about what we say as snow. You know, snow comes down. Sometimes it can be a blizzard. It can pile up, make big drifts, but snow melts and goes away. And it doesn't matter how much it snows in January or February around here, come the middle of July, there is no evidence of that snow to be found. But we think that's the way our words are. Our words are not like that. Our words are not like snow. James says they are a stain. They defile. They leave a stain. They leave evidence of themselves behind. And that stain is a reminder to somebody of something that was said that can bring back hurt and depression and anger and all sorts of unsavory emotions. The tongue is a fire. That's its character. The tongue in its influence is a stain. The tongue in its scope, verse 6, sets on fire the course of nature. And the word translated course is the word cosmos. And the word cosmos refers to the orderly world, the orderly universe, but it's a contradiction in terms here because the cosmos, the world that James is talking about, is chaotic. It sets on fire the course of nature. Just like a single match can burn down L.A. or burn down Lahaina or burn thousands of acres in a wildfire, a single word can destroy your family. A single word can destroy your marriage. If I ask you, who would you say is the greatest human monster in history. I would guess that Hitler would be in the top three. Maybe Stalin. But when you really want to talk about how hateful somebody is, you call him Hitler, right? I've seen documentaries of World War II that show a picture, often of a child, ragged, starving, amidst the ravages of war. And in the middle of that picture, you see some smoke coming out, and then you see a flame, and you see that flame spread and consume that entire picture. That's how war is often depicted. World War II, with the millions who were destroyed, began with a single thought in the mind of a man named Adolf Hitler. That's the scope. It just keeps burning till it's put out. And then what's the source of this fire? Now, I've got fire in my car. Comes from the gasoline and spark plug. I've got fire in my home. Comes from the natural gas and the furnace there. I've got fire in my home. I've got fire in my car. And they're under control. We put gas in a propane tank, right, Mike? And that tank is strong enough to keep that gas under control and keep people from exploding it. But look where James says, the fire that is our tongue comes from. It is set on fire by hell. The word translated hell is the word Gehenna. Only in the New Testament does Jesus and James use the word Gehenna. And James uses it to say that people who cannot control their tongue have got a pipeline straight into hell. That's where their words come from. Now, you talk about a problem. You talk about a difficulty when you realize that the tongue is a fire that can burn up everything, that can burn down everything, that defiles as well as burns, and that's connected to hell. We carry a real problem around in us. Now, just for a minute, let me tell you what you do about it. Let's go back to verse 7. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. I got to admit, I don't understand everything in this verse. I understand how birds have been tamed. I understand how beasts have been tamed. I don't think I've ever seen a trained snake or a trained alligator. Maybe you have. But James says everything, including reptiles, can be tamed. But no man can tame the tongue. It's an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. An unruly evil. That word means restless. Job shows up in heaven, and the devil shows up in heaven in Job chapter 1. God says, well, look who's here. Satan's here. Where have you been, Satan? Oh, walking to and fro, up and down, restless. The devil is restless. He's got to feed. He's got to eat. He's prowling about, seeking whom he may devour. And that's what the tongue is. It is a restless evil. No man can tame it. I was watching a thing the other day on the on the internet, is over in China. They had this water show where these girls were dressed like mermaids. If you've been to Weeki Wachee down in outside of Tampa, you've seen the same kind of show. These girls dress up like mermaids with the tail and everything, and they jump into the water, and you're sitting there behind big glass panels watching them go down and do things under the water. They had something like that in China. And they had this little girl in there dressed up like a mermaid, and this giant fish, about twice the size of that little girl, came up and just sucked that little girl's head right into its mouth. And she finally got free. Don't ever trust big fish. Fish bigger than you. They may seem to be tame, but you never know when they're going to get restless. And so she got out okay. But here's what you do about the difficulty of the tongue. James says the tongue is something no man can tame. And so you might be thinking, well, then don't blame me. If no man can tame the tongue, and I say something I shouldn't have, or I say something that causes trouble, don't blame me. Not my responsibility. No man can tame the tongue. James does not say that the tongue cannot be tamed. He says no man can tame it. Can God tame it? If Christ is right and what comes out of our mouth is what we allow in our heart, if we allow anger in our heart, angry words are going to come out. If we allow lust in our heart, lustful words. If we allow envy, jealousy, those are the kinds of words that are going to come out. Doctor says, stick out your tongue. The great physician says, stick out your tongue, because he can tell what's in our heart by what we say. But what if we filled our heart with something other than the works of the devil? What if we filled our heart with something other than the works of the flesh? What if, Philippians 1:11, we filled our heart with the fruits of righteousness? If we allowed God to take over our heart, what would then come out of our mouth? That's how you tame the tongue, by letting God take over your heart, take over your life, fill you with righteous things, and your speech will reflect that. And then James concludes by talking about inconsistency. In verse 9, there are two words repeated twice. I've got them circled in my Bible. James says, with it, with our tongue, we bless our God and Father. And with it, with our tongue, we curse men made in the likeness of God. Out of the same mouth, James says, comes blessings and cursings. And then he uses this illustration. Does a spring send forth fresh water and salt water, bitter water, at the same opening? When you go back to the water fountain to get a drink, what are you expecting to come out of that fountain? Sweet, good tasting, fresh water. You're not expecting alkaline water to come out of that. You want good water to come out. That's what you're expecting. When you go to a fig tree, you're not expecting to find cuckleburs hanging there or hedge apples. You're wanting figs on the fig tree. You know what people expect from us who know that we're Christians? They expect us to talk like we're Christians. They expect the things we say to be full of grace, seasoned with salt. They expect our words not to be ugly and hateful and poisonous and staining, defiling. They expect our words to be expressive of love. I don't want to be around a Christian who doesn't talk like a Christian. Now, I've been around some Christians who didn't talk like a Christian. I didn't hang around them long. And we shouldn't be Christians who don't talk like Christians. But by filling our heart with the fruit of the Spirit, that's how we get our tongue under control. And that's how our words are put out, doused, if they've been a fire. And so James here in chapter 3 wants us to be perfect. He says that if we can't control our tongue, then our religion, our worship is useless. He says we're to be swift to hear and slow to speak. But he doesn't mean we should never speak. If there's a time when we should talk up, may the courage Christ gives us allow us to speak up at such a time. And by getting our heart under control, we get our tongue under control, and that promotes peace among the people of God.